This is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. By now, you've probably heard of SPACs, right? Special Purpose Acquisition Companies raise money through a stock market listing, then buy private companies, making them public. It's a craze that's taken Wall Street by storm, and by the beginning of February, according to Dealogic data, SPACs had already raised $46 billion after a record-setting 2020. Now the trend is making its way here across the Atlantic. Just this week, the former boss of UniCredit, one of Italy's biggest banks, teamed up with the founder of Louis Vuitton handbag maker LVMH to launch a SPAC with the goal of buying a European financial company. So what exactly are these investment vehicles and why are they so popular? Alok Gupta, one of JP Morgan's top bankers who organizes these kinds of deals, explains.
A SPAC is a special purpose acquisition company. And what that essentially is a vehicle which is listed on a particular exchange, could be in the US, could be in Europe. And that vehicle's objective is essentially in a fixed amount of time to consummate an acquisition of a private company, causing that private company to effectively become a listed company in its own right.
It's become a much more popular way of effectively going public. It's just one of many ways. The way that, you know, we're sort of all used to hearing about companies going public is the traditional initial public offering process, which involves a roadshow, lots of media attention, maybe a trip to the floor of the stock exchange where a company starts trading. Why would companies choose to forego that process and do a SPAC deal over an IPO?
Look, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's a great question. It could do with a couple of things. One is with the nature of the business that the company has in the first place. So for example, a company that is extremely well established, has huge revenues, is profitable, is a very well-known brand, either in the broad market or in its own industry, is likely to always choose the IPO route. But a company which is slightly more early stage, slightly more in a place where the proof of concept is not completely there, or is in a sector which is a bit complicated for the layman or laywoman to understand, and where you can actually benefit by having a SPAC, because a SPAC crucially allows a company to share with investors its forward business plan. Particularly when you look at, you know, auto tech companies or electric vehicle manufacturers, there are many of them. All of us know that there will be more electric vehicles on the street in 2030 than they are today. That is undoubtedly true. But the question is, whose vehicles will they be? We certainly know they'll be Teslas, but what else? And in that light, I think these companies are able to use the SPAC route to better explain what they plan to do. You know, I'm going to make an electric van, and this is how I'm going to do it. And this is my plan to be able to send X thousand number of vans by 2024, thereby allowing investors to get a better and deeper understanding of what the company is seeking to do over a period of time and value it better, understand it better. You've also seen companies that might otherwise IPO choose the SPAC route. This is also because sometimes the SPAC route can be quicker.
So from an investor perspective, you know sort of the roadmap, the kinds of companies that these SPACs are looking to buy, but you don't know the company specifically, do you? Is that a risk from an investor point of view?
Yeah, look, you certainly don't know the company specifically, and that's, you know, that is very important from a disclosure perspective. I think what investors therefore look at is really what is the quality of the sponsor team? What kind of track record do they have, whether it be an entrepreneurial track record, whether it be, you know, a vast amount of experience in the financial field, whether some of the sponsors or all of the sponsors have led publicly listed companies before. So they will look at all of those things and say, look, this sponsor team is a high quality team. We don't know what they're going to acquire. There's probably a little bit of articulation around the sectors that they might look at. But really, investors are looking at those individuals or those firms or sponsors who are setting up the SPAC and saying, we believe these people will be able to execute a successful strategy. And on that basis, we will back them.
And what happens if they don't? What happens if that SPAC can't find a company to acquire, or if the deal falls apart? What happens then?
That's the beauty of the construct. The SPAC essentially has a 24-month period to get that acquisition. But if it does not in 24 months, investors' capital is redeemed. You know, this was a feature which basically led to the spurt in growth of SPACs in the US, because essentially investors are capital protected. And you can now employ those structures in various locations in Europe as well.
Now, we sort of hit on the traditional IPO process without some of those bright lights and the scrutiny that we see. Do these SPAC deals undergo the same kinds of regulatory scrutiny or investor scrutiny that, you know, the traditional IPO process involves?
Yeah, look, I mean, there is clearly a good degree of scrutiny because two things happen. When you actually do the acquisition, you do need to go to the market and raise funds at that point in time. You go to investors, a select group of investors, and say, look, the SPAC is planning to buy company X at a valuation of ABC. And would you investors, once you understand the business model and the business plan, would you sign up and be part of this exercise and help us raise more cash? So in that sense, the investor scrutiny or the validation of value, if you will, is submitted to at that point in time. It can't simply be that the two companies say, you know, the SPAC says, I will buy you for X and the company is happy, but that needs to get validated by the market. Equally, from a regulator standpoint, there is a merger document that needs to be put together that becomes public. It's hard to say whether the regulatory framework around this and the investor and market framework around it will evolve or not. I think it will. It's, you know, SPACs are still relatively young, so we will see continued evolution. But there certainly is a degree of scrutiny and focus in terms of how these transactions are put together.
There's been huge growth in demand for these vehicles, particularly in the U.S. I mean, are there enough target companies for these SPACs to buy? Do you worry about the quality of the kinds of companies that are sort of in the crosshairs now?
Look, I think it's a great question. I think we are certainly right now in a market, in a world where there are a lot of private companies that are incredibly exciting because, you know, there is a digitalization happening across so many sectors. You know, now there's auto tech and there's health tech. You know, that said, we've got to also admit that there are more than 350 SPACs in the US today. Clearly, I think given the limited time frame that SPACs have, which is 24 months in which to consummate the acquisition, I would, if I had to hazard a guess, say something like maybe 20 or 25% of the SPACs don't complete an acquisition. Maybe a few will do acquisitions, which will be less than stellar. And, you know, hopefully others will learn from those sorts of examples and, you know, not repeat those mistakes. I think a majority of them are really actually led by extremely strong sponsors who have great experience and deal-making chops. And I think that is going to result in them making good decisions in terms of the companies they acquire.
Do you think this is a trend? Like I said, this is a booming one in the US. Is this one you think will expand to other parts of the world?
Undoubtedly it will. And I think we are having this conversation on an appropriate day with one having been announced yesterday, which is listing in Amsterdam, and one transaction that we are running at this very moment, which is listing in Frankfurt. You know, there is a huge number of European as well as Asia-Pac companies that would want to be listed, but would want to be listed in their own regions. And I think for those companies, it will be important that there is a local SPAC offering as well. And if you think about the parameters that sort of dictate whether a SPAC can successfully list or not, there are only a couple. One is it a SPAC structure which is sensible from an investor standpoint, i.e. the point I made earlier about them being able to redeem if they want to redeem? That can be employed in Europe and can be employed quite widely in London, in Amsterdam, in Stockholm, in Paris, and in Frankfurt. The second element is there fundamentally a pool of capital that is deep enough? The answer to that is undoubtedly yes. There is huge demand, not only from European investors, but from global investors. Now, where do those SPACs come up? You know, for example, the most natural listing home for a French company might be Paris. Similarly, for a German company might be Frankfurt, and for a UK company might be London. So that will be driven by the objectives of the teams that are looking to set up SPACs. I would expect to see them across all of the key listing locations in Europe. I think there is a lot of momentum behind this today.
Now, with that German SPAC that you mentioned there, Lakestar, it seems like there was big demand for that. Is that sort of an indication of what we could see, what could be on the horizon for Europe, just a boom in demand just waiting to sort of explode?
Absolutely. The demand pools are really, really deep. I mean, they are across, and, you know, hopefully there will be some exciting sponsors who will look to do SPACs in Europe to, you know, allow that demand to find its natural home.
A fascinating trend. Alok Gupta from JP Morgan, thank you so much for breaking this all down for us.
Thank you very much. Lovely talking to you.